This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
A 1-1 in the air, deep right center field. That ball is gone! Daniel Murphy has homered in six straight postseason games. Nobody's ever done it before.
Ah, what a run. What a run in 2015. Otherworldly in is the only way you could put it. They couldn't get him out. The Dodgers couldn't get him out. The Cubs couldn't get him out. And the Mets got into the World Series that year. And Daniel Murphy announced his retirement today at the age of 35 after 12 seasons in the big leagues. And a .296 lifetime batting average. And Daniel is nice enough to join us now on the show. Daniel, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. Congratulations on your retirement. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me. Humbled, to be honest. Thank you very much. How are you guys holding up?
We're doing great. Thank goodness. Why now? 35 is young. I know you'll turn 36 in April. Why'd you decide, okay, I'm done?
It's a good question. I think heading into this year, I mentioned like the lockdown kind of gave our family, it gave us a chance, at least for me, to see some of what I was missing and we were missing when we weren't home as much. And so, you know, I kind of got to see one of the things that I would be able to get in retirement. And that was like a lot of time at home, even though that's a ton of work with the three kids, but it's a sweet time as well too. And then also on the field, I don't think I'm breaking any new ground to say that I wasn't super productive the last 2 years. And there are some things that I would need to do physically that I just felt there were better trade-offs, you know, if that makes sense.
What do you think were some of the issues the last couple of years, Daniel?
I'm going to be honest with you. These guys throw so hard these days. I mean, it's they're throwing hard and they're getting so good. And I think that in Colorado, I broke my finger, but that didn't have anything to do with it. I just felt like the knee surgery may have impacted me a bit more than I would have liked to have let on after the 2017 season. And I feel like that may have let me down a bit more than I had thought it was going to.
All right. So you had that incredible 2015 postseason in the first two rounds. You were the MVP of the NLCS. And then you end up signing a free agent contract with the Nationals, much to the dismay of Met fans. How did that come down? And did you have a chance to sign with the Mets? Was there regret on their part, on your part, that you didn't stay with the Mets?
Well, Sandy and the Mets made a qualifying offer that we declined after the season. And then as the market that offseason developed, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Neil Walker was traded for, and then as Drew Cabrera was signed, and Neil had a fantastic year in the next year on the team that went to the wild card. So, you know, there was never any ill will, but other than the qualifying offer, there wasn't a ton. There wasn't necessarily an offer made, but there was at the end of the season. And then, we were excited to land in D.C. It did put us in a position to play the Mets 19 times a year, which was unique after going into the home clubhouse for the first 7 years of your career to then come in on the bus and go to the visiting clubhouse. But the fans were so gracious on our return and really enjoyed being there in New York, and then also what the rivalry had to offer, especially in 2016, because the Mets were playing well too.
And you absolutely then enjoyed feasting on the Mets following season.
I swung the bat pretty well in 2016 against the Mets. Yeah, I was
against everybody.
Swung pretty
that
well.
Year.
It was good. We were good that year. Yeah, it was a good year. That one was a fun one. My wife kind of jokes a little bit is that she goes, the games I didn't go to, I would watch the box score. And I used to be so excited when you got one hit. And then that year in 2016, she goes, when you would get one, I would be a little bit disappointed. And I was like, well, sweetheart, it's a hard league, but I appreciate your expectations are so high. Great.
Now, when you look at the run in the playoffs with the Mets, Daniel, the first two rounds, the Dodgers and the Cubs, what was it like to be in that sort of groove? And, I mean, people do get in that groove. Very rarely do they get in that groove on the biggest stage during the season against the best players. What was that like? Can you explain it to us?
I would say it was a situation that seemed to be moving quickly, but also slow in certain points. Like, I felt like my at-bats started moving slower as we got into the divisional series. And then also on deck in game one, I hit a home run off of Clayton. And in the on-deck circle, I kind of did some physical adjustment that I don't really know what I did, but it made me feel very comfortable heading to the plate. And then I was fortunate to get immediate payback on the home run, and I was like, well, I'm not certain what I just did, but that might not be a bad thing to try to ride as long as you can. And, well, I just did, and I kind of kept getting this positive feedback of success, and then almost got in this loop that, like, I trust my swing. I trust that I'm going to make good decisions. There's traffic all over the place right now with the way the guys around me are swinging the bat. It's like, all right, here we go. Go try to enjoy yourself.
You know, looking back at it when I was – and I got some heat because I'm a Met fan. And I just didn't love the matchup with Kansas City. When you went into that series, how did you feel, or did you think that this was a team that maybe wasn't the best matchup for you?
I think that what we probably ended up finding out is that a team that was really good at putting the ball in play was able to combat one of our biggest strengths, which was swing and miss. And then you add in the fact that, like, I played really poor defense in the World Series, and that was because of the pressure that the Royals put on. And that's hats off to them, because I should make those plays. And those are plays that should be made, and they change the trajectory of ball games and the trajectory of a series. And so I also wondered as well, too, is that, you know, the ability of the Royals to make the choice to engage in another long season after losing the year before, I was wondering if, and also the fact that they didn't have a layoff either, that if that weighed into it, not as far as the timing, but more as I almost thought about it in terms of understanding the magnitude of what you're about to embark upon. But it's almost sometimes better to not do that, I think, if that makes sense.
I want to ask you about the specific moment when it kind of all came unglued. Harvey asking Terry to come back in there. Do you remember what you guys were thinking at that time? What were your thoughts, and what was sort of the feeling after that moment among the team?
Well, I think heading into it, Matt was going so good, and I'm going to be a bit honest and give myself away a bit. It's like, I am oblivious to a lot of stuff. David used to make fun of me for it all the time. I'm oblivious. So when he came back out, I didn't know that there had been a discussion or anything. I just thought, oh, Matt's going pretty good. We're going to run him out there again. And then, you know, unfortunately, it didn't work out. But as far as I kind of saw it, I was like, he had looked good to me. And I was like, go get him, brother. You're going good right now.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, you mentioned earlier in our conversation, I found it interesting that, you know, the last 2 years have been tough. Guys throw really hard. They're really good. You're a guy who puts the ball in play. The sport now has become swing and miss and home runs and walks. I know you love the game. If you play it for 12 years, you love it. Do you think this is good for the game?
I would say that if we're looking at ourselves from an entertainment industry standpoint, it seems like there's quite a few fans that are not enjoying the lack of in-game action. Mm-hmm. Okay, so balls in play, you know, stolen bases. So I think from that standpoint, we should definitely look at it and be like, we're in the entertainment industry, and so we should, you know, take stock of that and see what could be the best path forward. And then also I think of, well, what's incentivized? Because if you have the ability to walk and hit the ball at the ballpark, then that gives you some strikeout. You're allowed to have more strikeouts, kind of a sliding scale. And so, you know, we're kind of incentivizing power and on base percentage and come along with it, strikeouts in an entertainment industry where people want to see balls in play. So I think it's a fascinating conversation that I hope we continue to have as an industry.
And it's so interesting because now a guy who's just revered in baseball doesn't do that. DJ LeMahieu is a player that seems like a throwback, and everybody wants a DJ LeMahieu, but they really don't pay for guys like that.
Well, DJ is all sorts of special because he doesn't swing miss, and when he hits it, it's loud and it's far, and he's and even as well too with DJ to bounce around the infield as he has and not miss a beat defensively or offensively is so impressive because I'll be honest with you guys, I think defense is super, super hard, like really hard. And so to do it at such a high level like he is and be as offensively productive, I'm really happy for him.
What are you going to miss the most?
The boys, the men, the lads. Yeah, I think it would be the camaraderie. You know, I still find myself texting David when he'll have me. And it's kind of you just miss those relationships that you're able to cultivate over the years because – you know, as you go in and you work with someone and you have a common goal, you do life together for a time, and that's, you know, that can be a very sweet time.
I'm going to tell you what, Daniel, I'm sorry that I don't know you very well. I don't know you at all other than this way, and I got to tell you, get your agent, call up ESPN, call up Fox. You should be a broadcaster. You have a great voice.
Oh,
everybody who's ever dealt with you in baseball thinks you're a wonderful guy. Do that, and you can spend a lot of time at home as well. Do it. You could be great at it. I'm telling you.
Well, humbling. Thank you very much. Sincerely humbling. Thank you.
And don't Michael, you think so, Peter?
Yeah, but I don't need you encouraging ex-athletes to get into the business. I say they leave us alone.
I'm not going to take any of your jobs.
Now, I wanted to ask, Murph, I wanted to ask you about the Nationals. What was the feeling like for you watching what they did 2 years ago? Were you rooting for them? Was it bittersweet? That was obviously an amazing World Series. Take us through that.
Yeah, man. Yes to all of it. Can a couple things be true at the same time? I found myself rooting for the Nats. And then as they won, I was very excited. And then I stopped watching their celebration after like 30 seconds because the envy came in. So yes, I would say that two things were true at the same time. You know, to be there with Zim and Howie and Max and Steven and Rendon and Soto. I mean, it was fun to watch, and I was happy for those guys, but I was also felt like I had gotten left out as well, too. So two things were true at the same time.
You know, one more for me. You said that defense isn't easy, and you struggled in the World Series, and then you struggled offensively. How much did you sometimes take struggles defensively to the plate? Was that hard to separate the two?
Yeah, I think it was difficult, but as you asked that question, I think of Damian Easley because my rookie year, he told me a story kind of right there, and I think I had a bad at bat, and he goes, hey, and I'm going to pick my hat up in his. He goes, this is our defensive hat. It's time to go play defense now, and I was like, oh, separate the two. So I think that's something. Hopefully, as you get older, you learn how to separate the two. But you know, somebody who playing time came from offense, like I wanted to do really well in offense because I knew I had to work really hard on defense to play.
Daniel, we congratulate you on your retirement today. We hope that you enjoy your time with your family. And as I said, you'd be great at broadcasting, and you had a tremendous career. Not many people have close to a .300 lifetime batting average and did the things you did. So congratulations on your career, and good luck on your retirement.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me, Michael, Peter, Don. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks. This was fun.
You got it. Thank you so much. A good guy. I mean, really, what a good guy. You love to talk to somebody like that and appreciation. And it's funny, he got to spend time with his family and realize what retirement was going to be like. A lot of people have seen that during this past year.
Yeah.
Because even if you're working and you're at home all the time, and you kind of see what that will be like. And he liked what he saw.
I just like that he's someone who liked that and wanted to do it. It seems like all we ever get is players who immediately just want to go do more. Like, it doesn't seem like they really have the foresight to be like, you know what, let me enjoy a little bit of time here. So good for him.
All right, we're going to take a brief time out. We'll get back to the Deshaun Watson stuff. Cashman and Boone spoke today to the Yankee media. We'll hear from them as well. It's Kayla Greco-Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.